gotta go. You guys.
Okay. Can I run through some questions?
Absolutely. Go ahead.
All right. As you know, leadership is the thing that's my sticking point right now because I'm not doing it.
Yeah.
And it's created some questions that have always existed, but now they're in my face. Multiple pricing. We talked about that a lot this weekend. Now, you said you just did first two and then everybody else included, right?
Right.
Now, you're also doing they pay for the whole 6 years, correct?
Right.
Yeah. So
it wasn't necessarily right.
6 years.
Well, we're doing leadership as a secondary black belt. Okay. And again, that's not necessarily a recommendation.
Okay. So, all right. That answers that question.
But let me go back to the other question. Over the years, I've done the 10% off, 20% off, 25%, 50% off. I mean, every iteration, right? And I was very skeptical of family pricing. You know, this was kind of like Bill Clark trying to convince me for 2 or 3 years to do it that way. The thing that convinced me was two things. I ran it on a spreadsheet, and I looked at how many second and third family members we really had, and it was revenue neutral by the time I got done, because when you charge a little bit more for the second person.
I have a family of four right now that's, like, in the works.
Yeah.
So it's really in front of me right now.
Well, yeah, it's in front of you, but if you average it out over hundreds of students and how many you have in three and four, I found it was going to be about revenue neutral. Okay.
All right.
But in implementing it, what I liked at the time was that with multiple program directors, some of them couldn't walk and chew gum at the same time, is it's an easier presentation. Okay, that was really why I did. Okay, it doesn't apply if you're a single school operator or so. The thing that I came to find is we were already very family oriented, but it dramatically boosted our ability to get moms in. Especially in families of two or three, because some of them weren't going to pay 75% of the normal rate to come in with their kids when we were talking about $175 or something like that. The third thing is we got more aggressive with pricing. The only place we found the aggressive pricing to be a problem is family of five, family of four, right? Because now you're talking it's $800 a month, right? So it also let me get more aggressive on the front-end pricing, knowing that we weren't going to weed out the families that we wanted. That makes sense?
Yes.
Yeah.
What if you have a family that, everything aside, they've qualified, they really want to be a part of the program, and you know that you're taking bread off their table. What do you do? Do you just say, sorry, have a nice day, or do you scholarship?
Well, you know it because they've said it 3 or 4 times convincingly, or because you believe in that?
I mean, there's a family in my school right now that they're actually on my brochure, mm-hmm. but I know for a fact they would not be a part of my school, but they ended up bringing in so many members, and, the guy, the dad, is one of my instructors, and he's one of the biggest, proponents in my school.
Right.
And I scholarship them all into leadership. They didn't pay leadership, but they paid, right. What was affordable to them. And I know the guy's not making enough money to be spending, it would have been $700 or plus. No, it would have been $1,000 a month.
Yeah. Well, that goes back to some extent, the family
thing. Right.
But let me take it out of that specific example for a second. Is I always assume that everybody can afford it until convinced, proven wrong. Okay? Because as soon as you start prejudging, you always make the wrong prejudgment. I had single mom, works at the counter at Taco Bell, was a paid in full leadership. Okay? Because her mom came in and basically said to me, I don't want my grandkid to turn out like her. Right? So I've had enough cases of those over the years, I always assume, with until proven differently. And on the other side,
here's what came back to me when I was going through the process with them, is that dad was really on board with the whole thing, and they came back and said, I'm going to have to quit. But I could pay for her to be in leadership and him to be in master club.
Mm-hmm.
And they laid out their budget in front of me. They put literally what they were making, and I was like,
"Yeah, well, I can." My reaction is going to be, "I can pay for her to be in leadership. I can pay for him to be in master club. Fine, we're going to sign the deal. And then, by the way, I'm going to comp you and put her in leadership.
Okay.
Right? But I'm not going to negotiate price. right? I mean, I don't mind giving scholarships. But rule number one on a scholarship is never scholarship an asshole, right? Or somebody who has the potential to become that. And I've seen some of our weak program directors, all of a sudden, everybody whining and bitching in the school were the ones that they put on a scholarship because they complained about money, right? You've got to be very careful about that. And again, I mean, I want nice families that are going to get a great benefit from our program to be there, and I'll deal with finances later. But I also don't want to have somebody sit in front of me who's broke and should be broke and who's going to be a bad mix in school, right? And again, it's the same philosophy that Harvard, Yale, Stanford have, right? Is they're looking at the quality of the student and then they're figuring out how to get the family to pay for it. Always do it that way. You know, it's the, don't give a scholarship to somebody you figure you can fix.
Yeah.
Right? Because I've never fixed one yet. That's the parents, not the kid, by the way.
Leadership class breakdown. You know, in Mile High, do you guys do class A, book work, class B, martial arts? Or do you do a little bit of both?
Well, A day, B day is about different character development lessons. It's not about the difference in physical skill set that they're going to learn, right? So if there's two 15-minute classes a week, it'll be two 15-minute extra that both have a character development leadership lesson in it and both have extra martial arts stuff in it.
So a little bit of both.
Yeah.
Okay.
Well, I mean, you can't get up and lecture for 15 minutes.
No.
Right. So.
But what, you know, you guys do public speaking. How do you do that? Because we've been having troubles with that segment.
Oh well, that's easy because by the time they're in level three, they're learning to be an assistant instructor, and so they're public speaking to two kids, then five kids, and then 10 kids, and then the class.
Okay.
Right. I mean, you don't put them in a podium and have a private speech, right? But think about it the other way. Is I now get over my hesitation of talking to two people in leadership role, talking to 10 people in leadership role, talking to 20 people in leadership role. It's easy as they're transitioning to black belt to show them how to now transition that into other formats, right? Because the biggest thing is being able to organize their thoughts and present to a group.
Right. Now the big thing.
Anybody have any thoughts other than that? Or well, he is asking public speaking. So how do you get the biggest problem he's having in leadership is he's telling them they learn how to do public speaking, but how do you teach public speaking? Well, you teach public speaking and teaching and public speaking.
And one of the problems we have is when we're doing book work, the kids in Master Club are doing martial arts and sometimes they're doing cool stuff. And then other kids in leadership are going, I want to do that. I don't care what they do.
Well, that's why you don't let them overlap.
Honestly, the
part. Right.
The best way we've been able to do public speaking, right? I mean, obviously we give them handouts and we walk them through some of the public speaking stuff, right? But we will actually put them in charge of our map chats at the end of class.
Right. Yes. And by the way, that works fabulously.
So during a public speaking
that works
month,
fabulously.
You know, each day one of the different leadership kids in the school gets to do the map chat. You know, for one of the classes.
And even better than doing the match at for, you know, the lower level
right.
people.
Right, right.
Yeah.
And you introduce them as.
But at the higher level leadership program, at the higher level, what you can do is let them rotate who does the lesson. Because the lessons you're giving them out in writing and everything else. So you say, you're going to do the lesson next time, and you're going to do it after that, and you're going to do it after that. And now they do it, and you can help them along a little bit.
Right. Last
That's
point.
Very impressive to the parents.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Last question is the big one, enrollment system for leadership. Is that, you know, I have one, but it's all me.
Yeah.
So right now I'm trying to, like...
Describe your staffing right now.
I have a guy who stepped into my shoes from my original school. He's doing a great job with initial enrollment. I mean, absolutely. I mean, my percentages and his percentages for initial enrollment are almost identical.
Okay.
But no upgrade.
Well, no. That's not the question. You have two locations.
And the
Who's
second
the head
location,
instructor at the new location?
I have three people there.
Okay.
One guy, 4-3 black belt.
Okay.
He's not trained yet. He's off the speed.
Do you have a full timer there?
He would be full time with two part time backups.
Okay, so you have full time head instructor, 4-3 black belt, but not very up to speed yet. How about program director?
That's what I'm saying. He's doing everything.
Okay, so you have one full-time person at the new school,
right.
Two part-timers. What about at the previous school?
Two full-timers.
Okay, program director, instructor.
With so many peripheral black belts that...
A lot of sports staff.
Yes.
Okay. And so you were doing all of the upgrades at this school, and then you went over and focused on the grand opening.
And doing all the enrollments over there now that, you know, like you said, it's been happening.
Are you still there doing the enrollments?
Yeah. Until the guy gets up to speed, it would be disaster for me to leave that new school right now.
Okay. How long has he been training?
But about 4 months. But his sales skills are non-existent.
Okay. Is it the right guy?
I was going to say, maybe you got the wrong guy.
Yeah. Because if after 4 months of training, his sales skills are non-existent, then we always be non-existent.
Yeah, don't take this the wrong way, but my program director that I brought in was doing 25 students her second month without my help.
Yeah. Maybe this sounds too simple, but you know, what about just a presentation manual or a PowerPoint presentation that does it for you?
That's what I said.
Yeah, as a support tool, that's good. You still got it close.
Good.
Still got it close. I mean, let's go back 30 years. I mean, when I did the five schools, what it was is I was the grand opening person. But, I mean, that was, you know, in most cases, 6 to 12 weeks, right? So I would go in and force feed a bunch of students in there, handle the volume, get it up to speed. But I always had the staff in there with me, shadowing me, and they went to the next one, next one, next one. I made sure there were staff in the one I left, you know, to handle it. And the reason I don't like two locations is now you're in there handholding this guy, and you're not over here working with these people. And you can, with two locations, it's different than five or six, but with two locations, you certainly could have it structured where Tuesday, Thursday, Saturday, you're doing renewals over here with this guy sitting in, and Monday, Wednesday, Friday, you're doing renewals over here with this guy sitting in, and you've got somebody up to speed doing the enrollments because that's an easier process, right? And that's sustainable for a while. That's what LaValle used to do, is he had two locations, and he did renewals in both locations. Then he opened a third location, and his wife was at the third location, and he was still doing that. So that was for quite a while, frankly, and big numbers, right? So he would come in and do the hard sale, and he would have a program director doing the easy sale, and he would try to schedule it where he met, like, all the new students so he could start building rapport on the renewal process. That, I mean, that's doable for a while.
Yeah, I think that's where I'm going to have to go.
Yeah. But I wouldn't worry about if he's been training with you for 4 months and he can't do the enrollments himself.
He's been on the floor too much.
Okay.
That's what I say.
Well, what do you mean by that?
Is that he had you on the floor.
How many hours a week are you training him?
That's the thing. So he hadn't had time to be in the office with me. Like you said, shadowing was not an option.
Okay, but is he full-time?
Yes.
Okay. So what's happening 7 a.m. to 3 p.m. Monday through Friday?
Well, I've been working with him, but I've been going over to the other school, and you know what I mean? And my time is so split right now that it's...
Well, you got to do... You said your schedule forever. My schedule forever was, 10 to 1 on Monday, and I used to do 10 to midnight on Wednesday night. So... You've got to figure out what the schedule's going to be. But my schedule for years, and I mean years, was 10 to 1 on Monday, 10 p.m. to midnight on Wednesday, and Friday night. And I had staff from six schools together, then over the years, everybody was face-to-face. There was no damn excuse for not being there. And on Wednesday night, when we went to the night meeting, it was to free up being able to do schools and stuff. And I always figured... Monday's a bad day for them to be out in the community anyway. So, by the way, I tried to shift that one time because they were all whining that they didn't get a real weekend and they were working Saturdays and stuff. I tried to shift to we did like Monday night, and all it did is they got one less day of productivity done. So, you know, nothing else. I also had them all whining for a while that if we were closed Saturday and had a real weekend, everything would work just as well. And that was always food bar too, and never worked. We have a lot of our franchisees, by the way, do that. I just don't try to fight it. They're open Monday through Friday, close Saturday, Sunday, and it's just because they're lazy. I mean, they're just taking.
In my original location, I do training all the time with my guys, and now my time being split between the two,
Yeah.
I just didn't know how to do it.
You got it. I would schedule 5 hours a week, split over 2 days. And I always liked Monday, Wednesday, because if the week is going sideways, you get in the middle of the week and you get to redirect. The Junry system used to be every Friday. The problem with every Friday is they forget everything you told them over the weekend. Right? And then you don't have the beginning of the week, you don't start off strong. Right? So, to me, immutable would be Monday. And then I would do Wednesday morning, Wednesday night, or Thursday morning, and have it twice a week.
So when you say 10 a.m., you're talking about training staff from 10 a.m. to 1 p.m.?
Yeah, exactly. But the other thing is, frankly, if you're at that school and he needs to be the guy doing the enrollments and he's out on the floor too busy because there's all stuff going on, you know, you might put yourself out on the floor for a little bit, or you might pull the instructor from the other school over there for a while, because you got to get him in the office. He's got to be in that role. And, you know, frankly, if nothing else, you might just want to not be in either school at night for a while, because it's going to freak you out.
I think the other question is, what's he going to be in the end? Is he going to be the instructor, or is he going to be the program director?
Yeah, that's the other good question.
I mean, don't waste your time training him if he's going to teach. Go find somebody to train and just put them on staff now and be done with it. Unless you're going to become the program
director. He's going to have like a dual role, like the guy who's in my original location. He's doing the dual role, but he's doing fine with it. You know, he has a lot of support.
Yeah. You need a program director and an instructor, and you need somebody who's going to be in charge. Okay, in my opinion, it can be either one. I've always leaned towards the branch manager does all the sales, and then I have an instructor working for him. But that's not necessarily like Clark always goes the other direction. He's got the head instructor who's like in charge, and they've got the program director. And I think it's fine. Shulman does it that way too. But you've got to, it's again back to the Apple thing. You got to have somebody in charge. You know, I figured that out in 1985 because at the Junior Institute, the program director is always pointing to the instructor is pointing to the program director. Both are responsible. Nobody is. But you still got to have two people, right? And the second school mistake is to treat it like it's a small school, waiting to put the staff in until it's a big school. But all it does is guarantee it's all going to be a small school. Right? So you have to, right? I mean, you got to gear up and staff it.
You can't see how somebody can be teaching if they're having one class after another using your space. When is he going to help people?
Well, that's not really what's happening. He's the program director.
Yeah,
and he's got this instructor.
Well, Joe,
he's got to have another guy.
Yeah.
I didn't have the money to go out and pay a program director, and I know that's part of your problem. You got a new school, there's not this extra cash to pay somebody, right? So when I brought my girl in, it was a very clear understanding of, you don't get paid. There's no salary for you. You don't make anything unless you produce. She's paid, even to this point, strictly on commission. You sign somebody, you get $100. You don't sign anybody, you don't get anything. So she knew right off the bat that she had to work and she had to close deals. She did 25 the first month. For a 22-year-old girl, she made $2,500 that month. Last month, she did 42. She made $4,200 at 22 years old. She's thrilled. She couldn't be happier. Every time a contract's signed, she comes running out of the office with it to me because she knows she's making money. And you know what? I don't mind paying her that way because she's working. And we have a deal. When the school gets to 45,000 religiously every month, then we'll put her on, gross base salary. But she's there full time anyways. I mean, she works full time hours. She comes in at 11 and stays till 8 or 9. I mean, that's another way to approach it.
Right.
I might tweak the system, but it's exactly right. I've always hired people in like 30,000 a year or commission, whichever is higher, and occasionally had to hire somebody at a higher base salary, this salary ramp down, right? So, I can't quit my other job. I really want to be here, and I want the guy, and I need at least $4,500 to make my bills. So, it's $4,500, then it's $4,000, then it's $3,500, then it's $3,000, then it's $2,500.
There's so many people out of work right now. They're looking for
there's 1% unemployment in Colorado. I can't find you. Right now is the best time. I mean, it's a buyer's market.
Well, that was her thing. I mean, she was an interior designer who the interior design company she worked for went belly up.
Yeah.
and she was out of work at 22, was engaged to be married, and decided she didn't want to marry the guy and was out on her own.
And by the way, we all want to develop staff purely internally, and that's better if you've got the right person. But there's also Craigslist and Monster and all that stuff, and don't be afraid to use every avenue, right? So you try, some of the best staff I've had over the years is one of them was the older brother of a student who wasn't training himself. Another one was a gold belt that I ended up training up. Another one was two of them were hired from outside. They had some sales background and martial arts enthusiasts. And once they were trained, they were fine. I also had a whole series of guys got a bachelor's in PE or something like that. I trained him for 6 weeks and I had an instructor. So, if you're looking for the attitude, intelligence, and personality, and all the skills that we need, you can train them up on that. And the martial arts skills that we need, frankly, are the easiest things for us to train them on. The business skills are a little more difficult. Does that make sense? Mm-hmm. But it seems like your biggest problem is you're the program director of that new location.
Definitely.
Okay. Now, the system, I would transition to you do an approval process and you meet with everybody to give them approval to train in the new thing and do that in both locations. Right? So now, essentially, you're the closer for renewals of both locations. But as long as you're building up your image and who you are, and it's a big deal to meet with you, they should be a little nervous, and they're hoping that they can get your approval, right? And you can do that with three or four locations. I did it for a while with five locations, but I mean, I wasn't mostly I wasn't closing them. I was just setting a couple days, each month to go in and meet with as many of them as possible and give them a sign off or not. And if they couldn't show up, I would talk to the people and kind of like sign a little thing and, a little personal note because they're so high value, right? I mean, that's the deal. And you should be able to get your other guy to do them smoothly. But the fabulous way to get it going is you're doing the approval and he's sitting in with you and then you gradually phase out.
Yeah, I mean, it's definitely something that I haven't trained him up.
Yeah.
And, he came from a friend of mine's school, so he's really good on the floor.
Yeah.
Well, there are some fixes there too.
Right.
You didn't even know how to answer the phone properly.
Yeah.
Ridiculous.
Yeah.
And my friend in my school basically failed.
Yeah.
But
that means he was thoroughly trained in how to run a failing school.
Right. And he the good thing is that he recognizes that.
Yeah.
He recognizes and he's trying to fix it. He's sitting back going, "Holy shit, I don't know anything."
Right.
Rather than trying
to
do the old way, right?
Yeah.
Right.
Game to your free trade. Yeah, of course.
You said that you can set them up and then you can be the closer. How does that work?
What you do is the instructor talks to all the renewal candidates, and what the conversation is in our case it would be. I've been talking to Master Oliver about you. I'm so excited. To have you into the school. Have a safe flight back.
Thank you.
But I've been talking to Master Oliver about you. We're really excited. As I explained when we did the enrollment, we're working on qualifying you to train to black belt. And one of the things, if possible, he can be here next Tuesday. I'd really like for him to have an opportunity to meet you and for us to get his final approval to allow you to train black. With the right setup, it's very powerful, right? And honestly, I can then come in and I don't have to be halfway worth of shit, closing the deal because it's been built up so well that it's a laydown, right?
Yeah. How can you do that in an owner-operator location and have a similar effect?
It's tough because you're present so much, it's not that big a deal. But on the flip side is you just have the same dialogue going, right? So the instructor is saying, well, I really, I'm really excited about it. We've been talking I've been talking with Mikey about the.
It's work to lose that really fast.
Yeah, so that's a good way to destroy the whole setup. But
we'll do it,
Mikey. But you use it that way. I've been talking to him, and one of the things that we of course have to do is get his approval. And if it's okay with you, I was going to slot a time about 20 minutes before your class next Tuesday for us to sit down and go through and see if we can get his approval for you to train. I mean, you use the same setup.
Right.
I will say it's not as powerful.
Right. Right? I mean, they see me.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
We've been doing something of that sort in the school because I'm not teaching anymore. I mean, I teach a couple of kickboxing classes because I want to, and I teach some black belt classes because I want to, and that's about it. You know, I don't know how traditional your school is, but I mean, my instructors still hold the old tradition. If the master instructor walks across the floor, the entire floor stops, they get out.
Yeah.
You know, as long as you've got yourself on the pedestal, it actually probably holds a lot more water than you think it does.
Yeah, no, that's
it does. Yeah. It's just not as powerful as, like, you know, our old thing of June Reed coming in.
But, you know, if they are, if they feel like they're fighting for my time and they really get it,
right,
which is kind of the case, then.
Yeah. No, it is powerful. And by the way, I mean, all of those little things, it's one of the things, I mean, one of my regrets is that I never had a military background because the military is so good at having a ceremony for everything and all of the stuff. And, you know, if you look at the service academies, we'll see, you know, West Point, but, you know, there's all these traditions and histories, and at West Point they talk about the long gray line, is all that stuff is powerful. And, you know, in martial arts, all the guys that started talking about you should be wearing sweatpants and students don't want to wear uniforms, and, you know, you should be that's just bullshit. It's the opposite. The more of that stuff there is, the more powerful it is. Now, you want it in context specific, right? But the more of that kind of stuff there is, it doesn't matter whether it's adult male, adult female, or the kids market, it's so powerful. So the class stops and the master instructor is walking on the floor. You know, when I first moved to Denver, I got away from some of that stuff because it was kind of like our guys outside of Philly, they threw the baby out with the bathwater a little bit with Tiger Shulman. And a lot of the stuff that I had seen June Reed doing that I didn't like, I stopped doing. And then I realized that he was kind of like a teenager, right? Is your parents are really stupid, and the older you get, they're smarter and smarter and smarter, right? So, I mean, you know, the more I looked at it, the more I realized the challenges that they had in the organization, the smarter most of what they were doing was, and went further and further back to it. But all of that kind of what you said is kind of like old school or something like that, that's powerful. And You never want to get rid of that stuff. What you want to do is you want to be so good at marketing that you can screen the people you don't want in the door to begin with. And you want to be so good that, I mean, it's the bad way of saying it is a brainwashing, but really you want to be, everybody is so socialized that this is their team, right? It's you want it to be, in a positive way, a cultish, positive peer group where they really feel like they belong. And so many times nowadays, there's so many distractions that people don't have a place where they feel like they belong, right? And it doesn't matter what the organization is. I mean, if it's Apple Computer or Disney as an employee, or if it's a really good church, I mean, everybody has a sense of belonging and they have a sense of community. That's what your school has to be. And all of those traditions and so forth is powerful. Very powerful.
Now, I know my grandmaster now well over 40 years. And, you know, fishing and shooting and, you know, watch fights together. And, you know, I go up to hunt, you go up to his farm. I mean, I never call him anything but Hashi.
Yeah.
Never call him. And I don't allow my students to call me anything but Shikan. They don't know. I don't care where I am. Mm-hmm. Same thing with my instructors. They're sensei, Renshi, whatever they are. They absolutely better not. I don't want to hear it. I mean, that's just how we are. And I think that's important.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I've had a couple of friends where their kids have been training and the kids dropped out. And one of them said, well, can't they call you Steve now? I was like, no. I mean, that destroys the experience that they had. You know, it's exactly wrong. And
most of the parents are good with that. I mean, I run into parents sometimes. I haven't seen them. I don't know how. I don't remember. You know, hey, Shihan, how you doing? I'm great. I'm thinking about
it. You know? Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah. Well, and at least 80% of the parents you come in contact with and 100% of the ones that we want, that's part of why they're there. So they'll dramatically value it. And a few will resist immediately on the way in because they're just a little too fuzzy about things, but they'll end up appreciating it. I do see that in public and private schools is all of a sudden there's too much informality with the teachers, and it leads to discipline, and other problems. That makes sense. Who hasn't gone so far? Dave, have we hit everything that you need?
No.
What do we need?
My biggest problem is keeping stats.
Yeah.
Having my staff keep stats, I should say. Mm-hmm.
Well, we talked a little bit about the thing I have, but I think the big problem is just gotta make them do it. I showed them, we have a spreadsheet we use. Sean, I think you're using the same one, right? And he said, yeah, but they still have to manually enter it.
Well, you got an email.
Human error.
I mean, I get an email. I have all five. Yeah. We only went to that recently. And I even said it was part of the trade-off for cutting down to one meeting a week.
Right.
All right, you email me every day.
Yeah.
Right, so it's in my phone. There's my five emails from yesterday. It's every category I want to know.
Yep.
And they send it to me every day. And if I don't get it, I send back a one thing, stats question mark.
Yeah.
And then if I don't get it, if it goes longer, then it goes stats exclamation mark. But that's, it's a condition of employment. I need the information I need.
And then next is pick up the phone.
And then pick up the phone.
Yeah.
Dave, what's your email?
Are you in the hospital?
Dave, you have a form? Do you use an Excel?
Yeah.
Well, I have Excel. Well, we don't have it.
Don't take any of this as flippant, because everybody's dead serious. But in a single school environment, it's just super easy. Okay, the problem that I have is I tend to be the idea guy, but as a supervisor, day by day I get it. Okay, and a whole bunch of us in the room are kind of like that. And so what I always had, and this is a bigger school environment, is I always had the anal retentive bitch who was in charge of it, okay? Because I knew it wasn't me, okay? And our routine for years was if you showed up for a meeting without your stats, there was hella pay. And the first thing they did is there's a big whiteboard and they all put up their stats. And occasionally somebody lied to me because they didn't know, but they weren't going to admit they didn't know their stats. And I could usually figure out by looking at the numbers, which one wasn't. But at least, and the junior thing was the same thing. The first thing you did is you showed up and there's a big blackboard and everybody put up their stats. And if one out of the 10 schools didn't have all their numbers, everybody else is looking at them. In my case, you wouldn't bother. Our policy, by the way, is if you're late for the meeting and 30 seconds by the clock you're late, you bought drinks for everybody, which really started hurting the Starbucks here. And if you're a branch manager and you're late, you bought lunch. And then a few people started gaming the system, so they made an excuse not to show up for the meeting at all. So we just bought lunch, and I deducted it from your check, right? So every meeting we had started, if it was at 10 o'clock, it started at 10 o'clock. I mean, there was no ifs, ands, or buts. And the number of times we had somebody late unprepared was rare, okay? The next thing, though, is you got to check it at the beginning of the day, and you got to check it at the end of the day if you're a single school operator, right? So all the spreadsheets and all that stuff, just have a piece of paper and a clipboard and do a little tick mark of everything that happens. And then at the end of the day, you have an end-of-day recap of all the staff. And you can sit there right then and there and enter it into the spreadsheet. I mean, that's what I would do. And then, so if you're running a single school, I always had the rule, the policy when I was in a school is nobody leaves before I do, okay? And it wasn't that I wanted to jet out early. I would always even tell them I didn't have a key, right? Now, I always had a key. But it was, the guy jets out. I'm sitting there without a, with the door unlocked, I'm on my phone. You left, right? Because I wanted to be, class is over at 9, he's not in the back room changed and out the door because he's got a hot date at 9:15, but we're going to go and do a review of everything, right? And one of the things we're going to review is how many intros we had today, how many second intros, what did Mrs. Jones have to say, how did this go, how many renewal prep, and right then and there you're making sure the stats are all together, right? And so, you know, I mean, that could be you're sitting at the desk and you've got the computer and you're entering them on a daily basis right then and there. Now, it's a lot of discipline. And I got to tell you, you know, when I've been in a school, I find it irritating, but it's just being in the right habit, right? But you've got to have that every day. Somebody have a better answer to that? I mean, it's...
No, I'm like Mike. I mean, everything's emailed to me.
Yeah.
That's why when I was asked the question next door, I said, as of this morning, because I get everything, you know, at night, every night, whether I'm at the school or not.
Yeah.
Dave, I think, you know, what might be a good start is to just do it all on paper, and then, you know, once you get your spreadsheet filled, I'll do it later. I mean, you know, just simplicity gets done. It's easy.
Yeah.
Dave, what's your email on this too?
Yeah, but the stat sheet on a clipboard is good enough to get it rolling. And the other thing I didn't mention, I mean, this was for years, is for years we had it where basically every check that came in, every contract that came in, we had them doing it on a receipts journal, is I had a gal that was in charge of, Saturday afternoon, they all had to come to the central place and bring everything. And then she would go through every check, every credit card receipt, made sure it reconciled, make sure the contracts were reconciled, made sure the contracts were signed, all of that stuff. And this is what Robert needs, by the way, is he needs, you know, my version was, it was Julianne and it was Kari, and I can tell you through the years. But I had somebody who wasn't going to take no for an answer. And if they weren't there at 2:30 when they're supposed to be, she was on the phone calling them. And if they weren't there by 5, she was on the phone to me telling them they had shown up, and I was on the phone, right? And the standing joke in the NASCA circuit used to be is the stat sheet was in my hands by 5 o'clock Saturday. And every time I was at a tournament, I was sitting down there. If I wasn't judging, I was going through the stats, because my routine was every Saturday night I went through the stats. So I had Sunday to think about what our focus was for the Monday meeting. And but you can ask any one of the promoters. So it was a promoter back then. What's Oliver doing at the finals? Oh, he's going through his numbers. Right? Because I had the thing in hand by fax by 5 o'clock or there was hell to pay. And you've got to be in that kind of routine. It doesn't have to be that system. Right? But this was across like 6 locations. As I got out of, they did their own bank deposits. I got out of, they brought everything to us. And somebody looked at every check and looked at every credit card and looked at the reconciliation of inventory at the time and some of that stuff. But then we handled centrally faxing in the contracts to the billing company, you know, filing a duplicate, checking off the, you know, that the down payment was really paid. Because, you know, they'll start getting sloppy, right? So I just turned in a contract and they paid $50. Well, since when is our down payment $50? Oh, well, they're going to bring it in to me next week sometime. Well, when specifically are they going to bring it in? Why didn't say deferred out here for, you know, the other, right? I mean, if you don't do that, then all of a sudden it gets sloppy. You know, it's the Stephen Hawking quote, is all systems left, you know, left on their own tend towards entropy. Right, so.
I'm sorry, sir, just because we just, even as big as we are, we just went through that, then I think we got to do this. And I asked Grandma, you know, we got to talk about it. It's like, isn't there no other way to, I said that. The whole purpose of a duplicate system, right, it's duplicate. We are going to duplicate what someone was already supposed to do.
Yeah.
Right, which is doing it, and it has to be, in, you know, when we have the young lady in place and whatever.
Yeah.
And we tried month one, and I had actually the worst blowout I ever had in front of my staff of people, because we got all together, and they all got their contracts back that were incorrectly done. You know,
right.
I said, Sandra, what are the specifications? These are specifications. Good. Stacy, email them the specifications. Good. They all turned in their contracts. They all got the ones back that were incorrect.
Yeah.
And one of my staff said, what's the problem with it? I said, she asked you to put this information on this line. You didn't put it there. And he said, what does it matter? It really, so in 25 years, it's the worst blowout I ever had in front of my staff, right?
And usefully so.
Yeah. And afterwards, I felt bad and apologized for losing my level of professionalism, but that was actually only a technical apology, because I actually said, you know, I'm happy that I did that.
Yeah. By the way, one of the things that I got in the habit of years ago is reading everybody I can get my hands on of the right type of people. I mean, I don't care about celebrities, but... you know, like you look at Gates and Jobs, and you go through the list, Walt Disney, is they weren't known for being even tempered.
Yeah.
Okay. I mean, I saw a bio on somewhere TV, CNBC or something like that, on Gates recently, And there's like people who've been with Microsoft forever talking about him coming in and saying, that's the stupidest damn idea I've ever seen. What the hell were you thinking, you know, in that, you know, that article with Jobs. So now you've got to do it intelligently. Just being on the short fuse and, you know, having no personal self-control is not a good management technique. But blowing up at the right person at the right time and holding them accountable is very useful. So it's
he came back and apologized. He's my senior manager.
Yeah.
And he said, so what does it matter? And I, you know, the blowout was for me to say, for, you know, not any profanity, but okay, next month you do them all. Mm-hmm. You're responsible for reviewing all 80 contracts. They're all with all renewals. Yeah. 100 plus contracts. You're responsible. Right. No, sir. I got it. No. You're going to review the. No, did everybody hear me? Next month, he's going to review.
Right.
You know, and that went the whole thing. But he came back, you know, a week later, even though we, okay, yes, calm down, whatever. But still, a week later, at a different event, he came to serve me. Yeah. I just got to apologize because if anybody was supposed to back you up on this concept, it was supposed to be me.
Yeah.
And I apologize. You know, we'd already said, okay, we're already okay. He came back a week later. I still feel terrible. I should apologize.
Yeah.
Because it can't be for. There's not. I've told them, there's nothing you're doing, including statistics, that's for me.
Yeah.
It's actually for us.
Okay.
And if I may, we just sat around a round table recently and said, why is it absolutely imperative that we all do things the same way? And I asked, because I wanted to find out, what are they going to say? And someone said, oh, so the customer gets, the students get a consistent experience. Okay, that's a part of it. Because you said so, sir. Okay, that's a part of it.
Yeah.
But what is the real reason? Finally, one of my partner's son, actually, because you want to see us get the best results possible.
Right.
And if you're all independently messing around with the system and telling me that I signed this percent, right, if you're all making deals and down payments, then I can't. But, you know, when all of you are for, you must ask for this down payment, you must ask for this renewal process, you must do that, then I can say that this works or doesn't work. And I'll be the first one to change it if we're saying, geez, across all five schools, we're having trouble doing this, whatever. But don't break the system. Don't sneak around the system. And you hurt yourself. So that to me has been big, is, you know, we are forcing them, we're asking them to be consistent. Yeah. But it's never for just for our personal preference.
Right. Now, the big corporate problem is in creating reports and systems and things they're keeping track of that ends up not making any sense. It just, you know, it piles upon itself. And in a martial arts school, frankly, it's the same way. You know, I mean, truthfully, for 25 years, I was the turnaround artist for the organization. I mean, that's really what I did. I did grand openings. I did turnarounds. So I would always put myself in whatever. When I did, I would put myself in the worst school and make it the best school. And it was mostly to, I call it the lead dog principle, is to lift everybody else up, because wherever I got that school to go from, you know, from worst to best, so you get everybody else going. But one of my routines was always to walk into a school and throw everything away. And I'm not exaggerating by much. Is I would walk in and there's files and there's all kinds of stuff, and, you know, I got to the point, especially with now computer backups and stuff, all the contracts were filed chronologically. You know what I mean by that? There was a pile right there. And the next one went on top, the next one went on top, the next one went on top. And what I had is I had all the stuff I needed to get an agreement signed. I had all the stuff that happened that day. And, it, you know, in the middle of the night, I didn't want to touch anything other than throwing it in the box, right? And then at the end of the night, me and all the staff would go through and make sure the, you know, credit card had been matched out and the, you know, the deposit matched what came in and the contracts matched what came in. But once it was all processed and done, it went on the pile, right? And one of the things I do see happen on the contrast is we put in all these systems designed to keep everything organized, but then we have so many people following the paperwork crap that we don't do it. And it's again back to Robert's conversation about he needs, you know, some account 55-year-old crusty accountant type gal, but she's got to know her job isn't to fix him, right?
It is,
you know, here's the box. And every night you're going to go to the box, but you're ain't fixing me, right? So, but you've got to have very, very simple systems, because that's the way you make sure that everything gets done. Yeah. But I'm in contrast. You know, we used to have all the contracts were in Ford. So we had one for the student, one for the billing company, one for us at the corporate office, one for the school. The school had a file. The corporate office had a file. We had cross-checked everything, and then I figured out that in like 10 years we had gone and looked up two contracts, right? One, somebody to this, we're looking for the, you know, for the liability waiver, and someone else, credit card company claimed something because it was a chargeback, 1 in 10 years. If that's how often you're looking at something, you know, I mean, well, let's see, they enrolled around April 2 years ago.
Yeah, great.
Right? I mean, it's, you know, good enough.
It's not that bad.
So,
it's not that bad yet, thank God.
So, sir, because we're literally writing it now.
Yeah.
If you had, right, so we've got 100 contracts a month.
Yeah.
You know, from all five schools at least, right, being done. Now,
yeah, 25 a week.
Yeah. So, you recommend that the individual schools, because it's being entered into our system, they may or may not go to billing because it could be paid in full.
Right.
But we have a computer system at each location, so they could access that information and slice and dice it all different ways. Did you recommend they don't even need a hard copy at the school?
Or you don't need one centrally.
Okay.
How are they getting it to you centrally?
Yeah, they were bringing the physical contract, a copy of the physical contract.
And then what are you doing with it after that?
Yeah, I mean, technically file it, you don't even need to keep it, right?
Well,
who handles
it? I would keep a scan of it somewhere.
That's right.
Right? So, I mean, now, like for PC, it's paperboards and whatever, you know, but we went to years ago where we were just scanning everything and throwing away the hard copies and everything. You know, we're shredding it. But now we're using ASF, so it would fax over to ASF. They scan and keep a PDF in the student's file. We were scanning and keeping a copy of everything in paperboard and not keeping a copy of the contract in the file. Now, the dynamic has changed because they're all independent franchises right now. But.
And is the individual school, or would your individual school send it to billing, or your headquarters send it to billing?
4 years, it was everything came to headquarters and headquarters processor.
And including going to billing and making the deposits.
Exactly.
Because our guys are making the deposits and our guys are sending to billing.
I found that all the reconciliations, find the 20 bucks that was missing and this and that was missing and everything else, and not reconciling the stats, it was easier to centralize it all.
It was easier to centralize it all.
Yeah.
So we make all the deposits.
Yeah.
And we do all the sending to billing.
Exactly. I found that easier.
Even with 5 or 6.
Oh, yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
So,
well, more so with 5 or 6.
Right.
Okay.
Yeah.
Because what happens is if you have 100 contracts and 2 of them get lost in the circuit and don't get processed, what's your alternative? You're going through the billing every month, trying to reconcile it with what came in with them. If you're processing it all centrally, you know, you can, however you're doing it, but if you're doing it by data entry, you've got it all here. I mean, again, you can have a box, you do data entry, and then you go back in the system, verify that they showed up, you got billed the first time, if you got billed the first month, then you can stack them, file them, shred them, whatever you want to do. But I was always finding is 10% was falling through the cracks somewhere.
So it's...
Oh, yeah, that's probably a reasonable number. 1 out of 20 or 2 out of 20. Falling through the cracks somewhere, we let them all do it themselves, because you don't hire people in a karate school that are good at this crap, right? I mean, the salespeople aren't good at it, and the instructors aren't good at it, right? So you either have to have a third person, which is what Shulman does. He has his office manager who's expected to be good at that, or you have one person centrally that does it for everybody.
So in theory, once a week, even though it's only once a week.
Yeah.
So in theory, once a week, everybody brings her every contract that they've done during the last week.
Yeah.
She can. They've actually got the. Either the credit card form stapled to it, or the check stapled to it, or the cash stapled to it, or an envelope, whatever.
Yeah.
So we know the down payment on every one of these contracts is received. She sends them all to billing.
Yeah.
She would confirm they were received by billing.
Yeah.
I mean, they'll be happy.
Yeah.
The only question I
found that the absolute best way to have control without being obnoxious.
Right. No, then there's no follow-ups. I mean,
exactly.
And we've already, I mean, the contracts are already serial numbered.
Yeah.
So.
The only question I have with that is if a week's worth of cash, do you really want that hanging around?
And I mean, how much actual cash do you get?
On contracts, it's actually very little cash.
Yeah.
I don't know if we do it for all the other, you know. As you said, for retail, if somebody asks me, what's your tracking system? You know, the only true way even to do inventory is somebody has to count everything at one point with frequency.
Every week?
Yeah.
Every week?
Yeah.
And I mean,
if you're not going to do that, you don't really.
When we still have a bunch of inventory, and I would, I mean, you'd have to put a gun in my mouth to get me to go back and do it again. But every school is on a PAR system, right? So there was a certain number based upon their volume and size of how many size 3 foot pads, size 5 foot, size 7 foot pads that was on a PAR system. And at the end of every week, one of the things they had to turn in was their current count. And then from the central office, we would be ordered to get them back to PAR. So we were ordering every Monday to get them back to PAR from their count on Saturday and just keep recycling it that way. But I mean, you know, across six locations, I mean, right? And if you know, like one of the things Nick used to get people to do is set up a retail bank account and put all the retail money into that bank account. But, you know, the Century Direct thing, they go online, they order it, they drop ship it, unless there's some good argument not to be using that, or they don't have your thing. That's the easiest damn thing. I mean, Clark and I talked him into doing it. Because I just never want to touch it again. If I, you know, in the background of my nightmares, that's one of the things my nightmares do. Yeah. Does anybody have a better system than that? I mean, Mark Lazier used to have he had a warehouse in the corporate office, and they had the meetings. They would come get the stuff. Gene Reed had a warehouse, obviously, manufactured.
We order twice a month.
Yeah.
1st and 15th.
Yeah.
You can put your orders in, they'll receive the books, and they get ordered, and that's it. I don't really house much.
Yeah, with multiple locations, we were doing weekly. Every Monday morning, we would order separately for each school, have it drop ship directly to the school. For a while, we had it drop ship centrally, and they'd pick it up at the meetings, but then I just had it drop ship to the school. But the shipment was getting back on par. So, you know, 10 of this and 5 of this and whatever, and it was every week.
See, I don't want to keep that kind of inventory.
And is there mandatory merchandise packages worked into any programs, or is it just...
So they're
drop shipping.
Right.
Where are they ordering? Like, are you doing the ordering? Like instructors for somebody that's...
For the franchise schools right now, I don't try to control it.
Right.
Okay. Is they're welcome to buy it wholesale and sell it to the school. Most of them do because they're penny wise and pound foolish. I would just send them to the website, have more of the website drop ship it. Tiger Showman is as sharp as you get, and that's their deal. They have an order form at the front desk. The student fills out the stuff that they need. The staff member faxes it over to corporate office. They drop ship it to the student, and the school never gets involved. So, you know, if you the further away you can get from touching it, and by the way, I tracked it for 20 years. I never made a damn penny on this. The only time I ever made any money in retail is when I threw that big open tournament. I could make $20,000 in one day, and that would be more net I made in retail across six locations for 6 months. Because by the time you get slippage and you gave away this thing and they ordered the wrong size and somebody wants a special order some damn thing, you know, like a boxing ring. That was the, you know, one of my guys special ordered a boxing ring for somebody. And so there was $800 margin of the deal and $900 in shipping or something. But payroll was set up at the time that he was getting 12%, right? And so then I shifted payroll and I took retail out of it, so they only got percentages on tuition.
Dave, what else you got?
That's about it. Yeah, that's about it. I need to do more of that.
We didn't give you a simple, easy answer.
I know.
But
well, part of my problem is being at Charlie's for 15 years and being the only one who did anything.
Yeah.
So we didn't write a lot of stuff down.
You were well trained in
here.
You were well trained in being sloppy.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
If nobody else has anything, I have something to run by everybody. I was approached by Pop Warner.
Uh-huh. Does everybody know what that is?
Football. The local football group.
They're national, right?
Yes, yeah. And where we are, they're huge.
Yeah.
They do 4 professional football players from the Jets or Giants autograph signings a year as fundraisers. You know, that get 4,000 to 5,000 people at a signing at our local mall.
Okay.
They set up in the mall 3 or 4 times across March, April, and May each month to do registration. They do it at the mall because it's so popular. I was approached. They're trying to cut, their costs. So they were approached me about allowing their cheerleaders to use our space on Sunday when we're closed. Obviously, I'm not renting it to them. in the deal we're going to work out, so it doesn't violate any of my lease issues about subleasing. They carry their own insurance, which will name me as a secondary insured, so I don't have to worry about, you know, being sued on anything that happens on their watch. And in exchange, they want to give us a booth at all of their events to be able to hand out stuff at all of their football games and put banners up on the field and stuff. I thought it was a good idea, but I thought it would be good to run it by everybody and see what everybody's thoughts were and, you know, what maybe I might be missing.
One of the best promotional deals I ever had, which fell into our lap because it was the dad of two kids who got their blood drawn. He was the head of the Rocky Mountain Flag Football League. And at the end of every season, he would send them a 1 month free pass with a cover letter from him about how important it was for them to train in the offseason and how impressed he's been with his kids' development in my high karate. And 40,000 or something like that, I don't remember the real number, but it was a bunch, would go out in the mail the last day of the season to every participant, and it was always a home run. And so I could give a shit about the cheerleaders in on Sunday, but there's a lot of opportunity there. My standard thing is anytime somebody wants to rent space for anything is, you know, forget it. I don't want to do it. But from the standpoint of what you can do co-promotionally with that group, it's sky's the limit.
And it came about the same way.
Yeah.
The mother that's involved here is the vice president of Pop Warner,
yeah,
whose son trained with us in our Dragons program when he was younger.
Oh, yeah.
So
yeah,
that's why she came to us first.
So you've got to figure out the way to have somewhere in the season each coach brings their team in for their special lesson at the school, where there's the mass mailing that goes out to all the participants at the end of the year, where there's the package in, the registration. And of course, you're there at the mall with them. So when they register for the flag football season, they also get the thing with you. Does everybody have I-9 Sports in your area? Have you seen that one? That's now, it's a national franchise that does the same thing as Pop Warner, that has like football, cheerleading, and something else. And it's interesting, the transition. There's a bunch of like national organizations, for profit, that are doing these kids' sports. But there's a huge opportunity to work with them. And my guess is very little resistance if you approach them, right? So, yeah, but that's huge. You know, there's a huge opportunity there. And we all have that. I mean, you all have whoever's running that thing in your area. It's just going and tracking them down, which is a little bit of a challenge. And then it's setting up something that's a win-win. Something that I used to do, Dave, I think Dave Eaton was his idea, is he had a deal with the Girl Scouts in Nashville. And so every Girl Scout in the entire area would come by and do a 3 or 4 lesson deal to get their self-defense patch. And literally every Girl Scout in the metro area would come through the school during the year. There's huge opportunities for stuff like that. It's all about relationship. It's building the right relationship with the right person at the right time. What were some of the other things you were thinking about doing?
That's pretty on point with most of the stuff we're looking to do.
Yeah.
I didn't think of having the coaches bring them in. That's, I like that.
That's
but
a biggie.
Pretty much everything else was right on.
Yeah, don't turn it into a mall show. Turn it into a personal relationship with the coaches, and they're bringing the kids in. You get an extra benefit. Although, don't not do the mall thing, but I mean, do all this other stuff to get them tied in.
We just did their last autograph signing. They just did it last week. It was with Dontrell Bowles, who's one of the receivers for the Giants. Obviously, they just won the Super Bowl.
Oh, yeah, for the big one.
4,900 people. We came away with 122 leads.
Mm-hmm.
That's just crazy. So,
I don't know how that is. How did you go about getting leads?
Honestly, the best bet for her was to walk the line and hand out information and ask people to enter her raffle.
Okay.
There's just so many people, you couldn't even imagine trying to get them to the booth. It was insane.
Yeah, they're online for just walk the line.
The line of people, they start lining up at 9 a.m. in the morning to get autographs. And the autograph session doesn't start till 6.
Yeah.
That's like when we had Chuck Norris.
Yeah, it was just pure chaos. I went with her to set the booth up, and at 9 a.m. in the morning, we're setting the booth up. There's 150 people in line for a 6 p.m. autograph session. I'm going, what the hell is this?
We had done, by the way, the sheet that he was autographing one side, that is a long time ago, was the Sidekicks movie. The other side was the Mahatma Karate certificate. And it wasn't like they were going to tear it out and tear up the autograph to bring it in, but it was as they were coming through in line, they were getting, you know, the thing was two-sided. And then we had all of our staff in uniform facilitating. So it was our guys going to the line and one thing or another. Hey, where's mine?
Oh. John, these are a lot nicer than they were a couple of years ago. These look good, man.
John, this is a photo.
How much were those pieces then?
What's that?
How much were those pieces?
Less than $3, I forget.
Less than $3?
Yeah, $3.
John, this is a Photoshop picture.
It's, yeah, photo text to it.
Foster.
I mean, that number, that story is not really...
It's not really there.
No.
It's not really there. It's just a drop background.
The Tory.
Yeah, they cut all the kids out and put them on that stuff.
Yeah.
Their photos.
So,
this is nice.
Obviously, pretty calendar.
I like this job.
I have all my events on it for the year, which is nice, you know, except for the ones I had during the year, in which case I get to make special announcements about them. Hey, you know what? This isn't even on your calendar because it's a new thing we came up with, first time ever. And each month you can see there's some kind of community-oriented event and some kind of retention-oriented event. And there's coupons that support referral drives and sales on the right margin. I never get them back to their main billboards. I just assume that they see them. I can't promise you they're very effective, but I couldn't... getting rid of them doesn't make sense either.
You're talking about the right
side. On the right hand side there, yeah.
Really? You never get a single one of those back?
I get a few of them back here and there. Like, you know, the t-shirt one comes back, and most of them aren't really coupons or more like announcements, so.
There's probably something you could do with layout to get that to work better.
Well, I wish I knew anything about that subject, so if you're willing to share.
Many options.
Yeah, one thing I would do is get rid of the coupon board and the ones that aren't coupons. So make it a coupon border for the ones that you want them to tear out.
Oh, okay.
Okay. And leave it some other kind of border that makes it stand out for the ones that are billboards. You can also get this printed where it's perforated.
Right. I did that. It's just really expensive.
Because, yeah, probably not worth it.
Because to do partial perf, apparently, like not to go all the way across, is very expensive. So it was like an extra $1.50 per calendar.
Yeah.
And after the first year, I didn't go back. I was like,
can you put the coupons on the bottom then?
Yeah, I could. But then,
across the top,
then you squish the calendar.
Well, what if you did it here?
Yeah. When you flip it?
Yeah. Well, why not?
I would also get rid of the blue background, the ones you actually want them to use. You know, reversals are tough because the people don't read them as well, but like having the bluish purple background with black ink, you tend not to actually read what's there. And so what you could do is you could have the contrast be coupon border, white background, maybe red ink or two-color ink or something. It's full-color print anyway, on the ones you actually want them to use. I'm not sure any of that means you're actually going to use it, but it's, you know, a marginal improvement.
It's worth trying. As long as it's not ugly. I mean, I want this on the wall.
No, I mean, done right. I mean, and you can have the two-color coordinate with the picture, so it looks kind of cool.
Who did the layout on this
one? Me.
They're good, that's why.
Yeah, it's really good.
Where do you have it made?
You want to print them? Some, you know, print shop online. It was, you know, it's not fancy. It's 8.5 by 11, full color gold process.
Okay, what's Bonk Your Kids?
What's that?
Bonk Your Kids.
Oh, Bonk Your Kids. That's my Valentine's referral event, and you get to take the chompa swords and whack your kids with the chompa sword. It's really a fun event.
Does Bonk have a double
entendre?
Does it really?
Yeah.
I wouldn't have known.
Yeah, especially as a Valentine's.
Bonk would be a sexual comment.
Yeah.
I think Boink does. I didn't realize Boink does.
Yeah, I see.
Okay.
Maybe Bob would be better.
Bob. You know, maybe whack your kids.
That's a lot better.
Spank him.
I guess it's not as bad as bullying, so you're right. It's not as bad as bullying.
Okay. I don't think I'd be pointing.
Right? News at 11.
Exactly. That was my first reaction.
When we come back, we'll show you how one local instructor is bonking your kids.
That was the reaction I had.
Sometimes I try to agree. They just have the worst quotes.
So in Syracuse, I don't know if you ever told you this, it's a horror story. There's a picture of Jimmy Andrello, you know, working with a student, and it was an article about childhood. They had nothing to do with them. So if you read the caption, it said, instructors like Jimmy Andrello of Lavelli's Karate says, you know, physical touch is a big part of properly teaching martial arts. Mm-hmm. But the headline was, you know, be on the lookout for, you know, be on the lookout, whatever. You know, coaches touching children becoming an epidemic problem or whatever.
I mean, Steve. You know, anytime you think you have problems, I mean, you've just got to, that's one of the reasons I like the backstory, right, is he had two different statutory rapes in the newspaper. It's not like Syracuse is a big place, right? And Hafner had to deal with his brother in the newspaper, so I mean...
Well, we had 2 years ago the thing I called you about.
Yeah.
There's a guy that lives where my school is. There's a little, you know, group of houses right next to the shopping plaza. There was a guy that lived in those houses who was some kung fu guy, taught at a rec center or something, who drove to Westchester and solicited an undercover cop for purchasing his 11-year-old daughter in trade for sex.
Wow.
Right? And they parked the ABC national news van from Channel 7 News from New York City in my parking lot and panned in on my karate sign on my thing and were to talk about a local martial arts instructor who was arrested. I went berserk. The lawyers were on it like that.
You got the wrong footage, huh?
Okay. Well,
and the only way I found out was some parent called me and said, your school's on the internet. It hit the internet first. And then we got it stopped before it hit TV.
Shit.
Never underestimate the stupidity of the media. Okay, I mean, there's so much, so many stories they get wrong. And just a few times I've been involved with it is they're not all that concerned about accuracy. They're concerned about good visuals, right? At least TV. But see, that's part of why. Is the culture you build in the school, the reputation you build in the community, all the charitable stuff that you do, is there's always something that's going to happen, whether it's your fault or not. And, you know, in all these cases, it wasn't Steve's fault, it wasn't Keith's fault, it wasn't your fault. I mean, but you can't control it, right? You can give it your best shot. But if you're out there, and every year you've been out there at the Jones Hospital fundraising, and every year you've been out at the MS Walk, and every, you know, and every principal and PE teacher in the city knows you, and they think that you're the greatest thing since sliced bread. When some of this stuff happens, that, you know, people give you the benefit of the doubt. On the other hand, you know, if you haven't been, and their only interaction with you is promotional, trying to, you know, do your own thing, it's, you know, it can torpedo you in a hurry. So we're about at our time limit. Any last thing that we haven't accomplished adequately for anybody? Is everybody in pretty good shape? Our schedule was disregarding July 4th. Oh, here we go. What the hell month was this? February. Okay, so February. And what we don't have on the call, on the agenda, is a live call on the months that we have a group meeting. That's another point of conversation. I think a lot of times it would be useful to have a call a few days after the meeting because you get 72 hours later and everything digests. And then you had that one question you didn't think of, or, you know, Mike wants to ask Mikey the one question about the spreadsheet. you're up forever dubbed with that.
That's
at least it's not F Mike.
F Mike, yeah, I love that word.
But agree or disagree?
I agree.
Yeah.
Okay. This coming week, you guys want to do Thursday?
Yeah.
Is that a,
would Toby shoot that out as a reminder, or is that something that might?
Yeah, you remind me to remind you.
Can you remind me to do that?
I'll email Toby right now, sir.
Yeah.
That's great.
Are you emailing me now?
Let me make sure that I'm not
sending a phone email to everyone.
Toby? You can text him.
Yeah, no reply.
Well, now notice. Let me read you the paragraph. Let me read you the paragraph. Second, a note regarding email. While we do occasionally communicate via email, frankly, it's flaky, and all of our key staff members are inundated with email, and therefore communications via email often fall through the cracks. Additionally, we are not in an immediate response mode with the program. Urgent communications, any problems or opportunities, we shall act within 7 or 10 days. Longer around holidays or vacations, we recommend you communicate via discussion forum for any non-sensitive issue. For more sensitive issues that cannot wait until your scheduled call, we recommend fax. Now, I mean, that's direct, sincere. One is I get a couple hundred emails a day, and it's easy to fall through the cracks. Two is Toby probably is a lot more than that. And three is there's deliverability issues. You know, I mean, I've been sitting on the phone with people, and they said, I just emailed it to you, and it doesn't get to, and they emailed again, and it gets there.
Can I make a request to the group, and feel free to accept or decline? Can I request that each person make one post before the call, not next week, but the following call on the board, just so we get that board
going
a little bit?
Good idea.
How many people would accept that request?
Everybody but mine.
I'm going to make all my hitters. If we get forced, that'd be lit.
I need the board.
My one thing about the board is, like, you know, I joined, kind of went in and looked around.
I don't understand why we just don't set up a Facebook group. It's so much easier. We share documents, you can video conference on it, you can do everything right on there. You don't even need the board anymore.
I'm fine with that, too, as long as we have some mechanism for sharing.
And a Facebook group is private unless accepted in.
Well, you can open just a private group where you're only invited.
Okay.
You, and whoever the admin is, you or Toby or Bob or whoever, has to approve of them anyways, so before they're able to do anything on the group.
I haven't messed with that in a while.
It's how we're running a Biggest Loser contest for my kickboxing program, and it's how I handle, they have their own private group where they can ask questions and stuff.
Is it searchable, indexable, and stuff?
No.
Well, that's a suggestion. There's Google Circles, which I don't like. Google Plus or whatever. Anybody like Google Plus other than Toby?
Nope.
Yeah.
Toby's
yellow. Yeah. Well, I mean, you know, I basically hate everything Google other than search. And Toby's the I love everything Google. And I'm the raving Apple fanatic, and he's, you know, convinced everything they do is overpriced and underpowered. So, oh, thank you. Noon.
It's better than me.
Eastern or noon Mountain? Do you want to do 2 p.m. or 2 p.m.?
Specialist is such whatever.
I'll be on the plane from here. That's
right. East of when?
Thursday.
No, I mean for the call.
Yeah, I'll be coming back. I'll be traveling that day back.
A week from Thursday?
Oh, a week from Thursday?
Oh, wait.
I mean, a week from... What the hell is today?
You're talking about Thursday.
You're talking about this upcoming Thursday.
23rd.
Next week.
Yeah,
23rd.
23rd.
Just keep hanging out here. I'm still here. That's all right.
We can do Friday?
No, every Thursday. I'm sure Thursday's good for you.
It's Thursday. Okay. So, we're saying to the Keister.
So, I've got a shout out to him over the Sunday morning.
And we'll record it.
Right.
So...
what airline are you flying?
And use the same pin and call in that's on here for Inner Circle. So there's 218 and the 123456 pound. So just use that, and it'll be good.
I'm sorry, I missed that.
The same pin and pound that's on here. Use that. Okay. So we'll do a group teleconference next week. Anybody who wants to schedule a one-on-one before the end of the month, just call Bob or and we'll follow. Okay, so I'm fine with that. So feel free to do that. And again, I mean, just this group. But you know, if a scheduled time isn't going to work, try to give Bob a week notice or something like that. He can reschedule into the agenda, and I'll be reminded to go tell him that we want to do want to do that. Any other thoughts or questions on ways that in 2012 we can improve the experience to make you guys a lot richer? What else would be extremely useful for you?
Well, my thing is I would love to add on, you know, hours or days or dedicate time to workshopping over here.
Right.
So we walk out not with just a to-do list, but with a to-done list.
Okay. Okay.
That would be, we had talked about doing something that for this weekend. It didn't quite get put together, but
yeah. So, for instance,
marketing plan, drip system, upgrade system, phone scripts for, you know, four different kinds of things, a system for birthday parties, a system, you know, just system design and so forth. Where we nail down the 15 key ingredients, we all come up with something, we set to work on a different part of it each. Throw it all together in a document, then we go home, and all we need to do is customize, you know, it with our particular, you know, slant of psychosis, and then we have exactly what we want.
That's interesting. I'm always the guy who hates freaking let's get together and work together on something. So like when Kennedy or somebody like that, he is too, by the way. Is when somebody does that, I'm the one out in the hallway on the laptop until that part of it's over, which doesn't mean it's not valuable for everybody else. But you got to point it out to who thinks on a topical basis, half a day or something like that, focus that way would be useful. Well, that's a majority. Okay. And so now the question is figuring out a useful topic. You know, probably in a group of 12 to 15 people, you do, you know, two groups of six or something like that. That's manageable, and you go to work on a topic. What would be a topic for May?
We could each write 10 blog posts to put on each other's blogs, and then we could all post them out.
And that you can contract out for video games for 30 cents. It has to be like, you know, $10,000 an hour activity, right? So what would be $10,000 an hour activity?
I don't know if this ties in with that, but one thing you asked, what other questions? You mentioned, I think, if I heard you right, next year or way down the line, 2 years, you're going to do the internet. That changes so quickly. I would love to do that sooner. I don't know if that could tie in with this.
We'll do a pretty good chunk at the marketing bootcamp.
Okay.
The intent would be is you know, if the marketing bootcamp is about 20, 24 hours, we'll do 4 or 5 hours on it. Okay. But then the other one we'll do is pretty much pure internet with a little bit of direct response.
On that note, going to each of our websites, looking at the back end, you know, having that kind of, you know, discussion about, oh, well, you know what he did here was really clever. You know, everyone cut and paste this, and, you know, looking at the source code and doing that kind of training where we actually look at what everyone's doing right and wrong with our own actual websites. That would be really valuable.
That was pretty, I thought that was pretty good in last July. We went through Elite MMA, and we went through Joe's and a couple of others and had them all projected. I thought that was pretty effective in that case. And again, I mean, before our next call, that will be over the link, and I'll be happy to go through thoroughly and take notes and so forth. There are a couple things, like when we were talking about your site, is, you know, there are things that are opinion until A/B split tested, and there are things that are almost always true. One of the things that's almost always true is the more testimonials you layer over and the more realistic they are, the better off you are. So if they're on video, they're better than audio. If they're on audio, they're better in written. The more detail you give about the person, the better off you are. And the more you can have either the testimonial specific to the individual, or the more you can have a variety of testimonials. So you have the kid, you know, in our case, we have a kid who was sexually abused, we had a girl who was crippled, and we had the mom that had a heart problem, and a whole bunch of people who didn't have that type of stuff, but were different ages and growth. So you could point at this one is the one. So that's one of the universals, is you know, the more you layer that on, the better off you are. I think another universal is you've always got to have that grease shoot so you don't get them distracted, right? So if you're showing a prospect things that you're showing a student that's irrelevant, you're creating problems for yourself and letting them click around to things that are irrelevant. You know, some of the things that Robert talked about with Facebook, I think were useful ideas and good ideas. I think generally Twitter, Facebook, and all that stuff, other than some pay-per-click, isn't proven itself to be very useful that I have seen yet. So it's certainly possible to waste a lot of time on it. That having been said, you know, I've got about 5,000 school owners on Facebook and go post things periodically and so forth because I have this sense in the back of my mind that it might be useful, but I haven't, you know, haven't seen it proven yet. So
I know, like even for you, like Rand, when you had Rand out in Philadelphia with you, that's how he found out,
right?
You know, and then he called me and said, "Hey, listen, I need to do a lot with Steven." And so, we started talking to you, and we go, so.
Yeah, so anecdotally,
it's a little viral, you know. But you got to treat it that way,
right?
The only thing I found Twitter to be useful for, and I don't know if I shared this with the group or not, but Twitter, the only thing I can find that it's good for, and we've used it for this, and it's worked for us. Go out on Twitter and find every local TV person, radio personality, whatever, on Twitter. Follow them and reply to anything they put up that you find valuable. Oh, I think that's great, and, you know, whatever. Just always comment on their little stuff, tweet back to them. And then when you find something that looks like you can tie into it, you know, tweet back after you've built a relationship. Oh, you know, yeah, I'm here at so-and-so, we can help by doing something like this. We've been on TV 3 times because of it.
Yeah, that's good feedback.
Twitter's good that way, but it's really all it's good for.
Yeah. And by the way, just keep in mind you can link all that stuff together anymore. There's Ping, but there's also now LinkedIn. You can tie to Twitter. So now if I post something on Facebook, it shows up in Twitter. Or if I post something on LinkedIn, it shows up in Twitter. It shows up on Facebook. So, you know, you don't have to duplicate effort to have that stuff happening. But pay-per-click on Facebook is working fairly well. And the good thing is you can target. The bad thing is the click-through rates are abysmal. Facebook in their IPO freely admitted that 40% of logins on Facebook right now are mobile, probably soon to be 60 or 70%, and they haven't figured out how to make money on mobile yet. Right? So, I mean, it's, you know, interesting for like a $100 billion valuation, you know.
What do they charge to click?
It depends. But yeah. My click-through rate is 3.8%, which
is good.
That's good. Yeah. So, that's good. I mean, my Google pay-per-click is, no, Facebook pay-per-click is expensive because it's targeted to 98 cents a click.
Is it not?
Yeah. I spend about $25 a week on Facebook pay-per-click.
Friendly people.
Yeah, if it were 25 cents a piece, if you get one a year.
Right.
You know, but certainly if you get one a month or every couple months, it'd be fine. The other thing is we do need confirmed RSVPs and all that stuff. You know, please get this stuff back to us so we have all that nailed down. It's not an attempt to pushy. Right now, we're booking the bus on the West Point campus, and we're booking the headcount for the Disney tour, right? Or not tour, the seminar. It's not like what we did Wednesday. That was kind of a last minute add-on. From a standpoint of what that was that useful? See, I mean, from my standpoint, it's always just useful to see how meticulous these damn guys are and how big the operation is. And it eliminates any excuses that you have on that, right? I mean, you know, think about it from that context. It's just ridiculous. And by the way, I mean, the one excuse I've heard people use is, well, they had, you know, 30 years and they have multi-billion dollars to do this stuff. Well, I mean, Walt was thinking this way when he had to go borrow from his life insurance policy to open the first park that couldn't get the board of directors to approve it, right? And keep in mind is, you know, if Walt had listened to the money people in his company, Disney World and Land never would have existed. And if Jobs had listened to anybody in the world, the Apple stores never would have existed. It's interesting, you know, at his death, Fortune and Wired and several magazines who had done articles over the years published books of all the articles. And if you pick those up, some of you can get on Kindle, it's really interesting to watch the articles of, you know, Apple's next fiasco, the Apple stores, or, you know, Nokia or Motorola. You know, no way some PC company is going to come into the phone business and, you know, and have an impact. I mean, over the years, I mean, everything that was a home run, in almost all cases, everybody said it couldn't be done. So, You know, Disney, it was definitely the case. Apple, it was definitely the case. I mean, there's a whole series of those type of examples. It's one of the things that's useful reading biographies is, you know, Mike said, you know, Disney's been bankrupt 11 times. You know, he also had a couple of nervous breakdowns. There's one time where the staff put him on a boat and said, you're going on a month cruise because you can't be around us anymore. So it's not always a pleasant process creating, you know, new and excellent things. So it's useful to look. And one of the biggest lessons, I think, and if you look at, like, the job bio, is he was all about the outcome, not about, you know, having the process be pleasant to get there. You know, and some people rebel against somebody being that much of an asshole, but I mean, the reality is he surrounded himself when he rebuilt the company with excellent people. He also hired some excellent people who flushed pretty quickly because they didn't fit in. And that surrounded by excellence, I mean, all you have to look at any of these is like we were talking about watching JCPenney. If you don't know the story, is he hired one of the best retail guys in the world from Target to do the Apple stores, and the guy from the Apple stores just went to JCPenney to try to turn JCPenney around. And you've seen all their
CEO of JCPenney, though, it's not in the same position.
Right.
Which is even more interesting.
Yeah. So it'll be interesting to see how transferable that is. It was one of the comments in that book I read, is Apple hasn't had the big outflux of people going from a role in Apple to being CEO of other companies like, say, GE. And GE's focus has been different over the years. GE's focus has been succession planning. Apple's focus has been having the perfect person in their role, but not cross-functional training. And, you know, I've always believed in our case, we should everybody be trained on everything. But in Apple's case, their focus was, in our context, is having the best possible program director and the best possible instructor. And it's like the administrative thing I talked about. I'm okay, you know, my best program director ever lost a $5,000 check one time. We had to track it down to get a thing. He couldn't organize a two-car parade. We had to hire somebody to follow him around to pick up the contracts before they got lost. I mean, literally. But the guy could produce. So, you know,
The tour. What time is the 3 o'clock parade?
Yeah. If the guy can produce, you go hire somebody for $6 an hour or $8 an hour to pick up after him. So, you know, don't ever try to pick the best person for that role and expect them to be well-rounded, because in most cases they aren't, right? So in most cases, that best person is not going to be good at the other stuff. Good. Anything else to wrap up with? You guys are welcome to stay for as much of the peak performers as you want, or go have a nice steak or whatever, and either way is fine. For those of you that went to dinner, I enjoyed Benihana's. It was good.
It was good.
That was a good call, and frankly, Ghirardelli was better. So,
what's the schedule for tomorrow? What are they doing tomorrow?
Are
they done?
Today's Friday. They're all day. So
they're doing Toby said in the morning. They're doing quarterly marketing plans.
Yeah, they're all day. So and probably late into the night tonight, nine or ten. I haven't seen what work he's at on the schedule. I'm going to be doing most of it tomorrow, and they're probably going until about 9 tonight. And you're welcome to jump in on anything you want. It is, interestingly, so we have, 38 or 40 in peak performers right now, and then you see you had, you know, 14, 15 school owners that actually showed up. Now, we've got 8 or 10 of them that are pretty new, you know, too new to have been expected to book a plane ticket or something. But that group is kind of evenly split between 17 to 28 schools that kind of have a clue and just need a little oomph to get things rolling a little bit, and people who are really, 12 to, you know, or in some cases 7 to, to 17, where they really don't have any of the systems in place, and most of it's all been personality-based. So one of the things we're looking at is we may have to split that into two groups, because we either, you know, my direction is always talk to the highest level and then translate it to the lower level, but we don't want, you know, again, it's a diverse group. It's kind of like putting your brown belts in with your gold belts. So there is some issues there as well that we're trying to solve. Well, good. I think we're at our time limit, and you've got to go to the plane.
Eric, nice to see you.
Thank you.
Your home.
Thank
you. It's very nice to meet you.
And
what are you doing, Tyler? Oh, you got a wife.
I didn't like on all wives. They got reservations.
Guys, give me feedback next week. Email or fax on continual improvement.
Very useful. We'll talk soon.